Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and ghouls, step right up. Behind this curtain lies a ghastly concoction of delight, horror, fantasy, and terror. Your every wish is our command. Your every whimsical desire brought to life. But I'm warning you, there's always a price. Welcome to the greatest show on earth!
And welcome back to the greatest show on earth that is Talking Terror. As always, I'm your old pal, the King of Horror, Andy G, welcoming you back to this episode of the show where tonight we're talking about the Gold Geek Keith's episode, Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey from 2023, directed by Reese Frake Waterfield. So we're going to be getting into a whole lot of fucking up your childhood with Winnie the Pooh. But as always, I'm joined by the bold and the beautiful, the Gold Geek Keith.
To take control of our lives and accomplish something, we need to learn to believe. You know, this is, in its heart, what Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey, was really trying to achieve. You know, it was trying to become one with itself and show us the true nature that is the bear, everybody. And welcome to Talking Terror.
Getting philosophical, man. We don't need to for this movie, but getting very philosophical, which I enjoy.
It was amazing.
It's something. I know that part two came out the other day. Got a huge fucking Rotten Tomatoes rating. This one we're going to be talking about tonight had like a 3%. On Rotten Tomatoes, the sequel had like a 90%. Like, it was like near perfect. So, you know, Ghoul,
really?
Had to pick part two. Yeah. It got a huge Rotten Tomatoes rating. I put it on the Talking Terror Facebook page. I was like, holy shit.
Again, I know part two released yesterday. But, you know, and mm-hmm. It was something that I did consider seeing it, figuring, all right, I'll watch the first movie, and then I'll go do part two. Just to see and have a little bit of something to talk about in regards to the sequel tonight. But unfortunately, it is a Fathom event, so it does not fall under the A-list program, and the tickets for it are like $18 a pop. And
Ooh, yeah,
I don't know. You know, I'll just wait for it to pop up on streaming, because I'm sure it'll pop up on Peacock soon, and that'll be that. Or they'll give it a wide – or if successful – they'll give it a wider release, and then, you know, it'll just be on the A-list.
Yeah, I'm sure. I want to introduce the Demonic Dean. He is here. So welcome to the show, Dean.
Yes, here I am.
Once again.
Ready to talk about...
He's been torn into pieces.
Once again.
but I wanted to bring
talk
up
about
the fact that...
Winnie the Pooh.
Blood and Honey.
Of which,
mm-hmm.
And Jigger too. Oh,
we will share our thoughts. But I did see that the buzz about the sequel is like huge time positive.
The buzz.
We'll obviously talk about it, but I also wanted to talk about the fact that Late Night with the Devil premiered last weekend, along with Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, which we're going to talk about. But I just love the fact that I put it on the Facebook page that Late Night with the Devil in its opening weekend made $666,666. So 666 all across the board for Late Night with the Devil. Not making it up. It's a real fucking
silly tally.
Here comes the ghoul with his conspiracy theory.
Oh, come
in 3, 2, 1.
Come on now, give me a break. Let's really look at that.
Dean,
and be like,
go.
come on. That's just fucking stupid. It ain't like they can't like write it up that's what the movie made. Come on, like realistically, think about it. What would be the odds that the just the right amount of people would have gone to go see Late Night with the Devil and have that fucking movie end up with a 666 in the fucking numbers? That's fucking ridiculous.
I know, but it just made so much sense. I was like, you know what? I fucking love it. Whether or not it's an actual fact, I was like, you know what? I love it. Just like when I went to go see the Omen remake on June 6, 2006. Like, oh, 666, hell yeah. Like, it's just, it's fun.
But that's something that you can work with. You know what I mean? That's like, oh, okay,
yeah.
We scheduled this movie to come out on that date for that reason. There's just too many variables involved for the monetary fucking amount for that movie to come out to that amount.
Mm-hmm. No, but
it's all the
again,
marketing.
It's fun. It's fun.
It probably is, just like
and,
Smile, you know? That's like all the people that were at the baseball games and everything, you know? Oh, they were afflicted by the fucking demon. It's real.
It's fun either way. I wanted to go see it in theaters, Late Night with the Devil, I should say. But it comes to Shudder in April. So I might just save it for April when it comes to Shudder and see it at home, you know? But look forward to it either way. But
I was
going to
go
horror news
this weekend,
yeah.
But my problem was is that the show times for the movie, you know, I guess they're trying to just keep the aesthetic that it's a horror movie and that it can only be on late at night.
Yeah.
And that, 'cause all the show times are like post 7 o'clock. The earliest show time in the state of New Jersey in AMC theaters was 6:30. And I couldn't pull that off on Saturday because I had to pick up, you know, my one kid from work at 8 o'clock. And Sunday, it's like, you know, I got work on Monday. I don't feel like going to the theater that late. And, you know, just not on Sunday night. You know, I ended up doing it Monday night, you know, to go see the Scream Unseen. But, you know, I just was not feeling it Sunday night. So I ended up not getting to go see that one. But I will. I'll get there. I'll see it. And, I will report back as soon as I can.
I mean, I'm just waiting for it to go on Shudder so I can just watch it at home. Like, I know I love the theater experience, but I also just don't mind seeing it at home. But, Ghoul, you saw the Surprise movie. You went to go to AMC and saw the Surprise movie. It happened
to be Sting.
A spider movie. I had to look it up after you announced it. You're like, oh, it was Sting. Okay, let me look this up. I think I put
what
it on the Facebook page.
Movie?
I didn't remember, but it was Sting.
Sting, like the singer. Yeah. So AMC does that thing that they do once a month.
Seeds of Love.
Sorry, it's called Seen. It's normally called Seen Unseen. In which, you know, you just go, like, regular tickets are $5 a pop. It's included with A-List, so I don't pay anything for my ticket. But all you know is the rating of the film and the runtime. I guess what they started doing is I guess every other month now they do Scream Unseen, and it's a horror movie instead of it being just a standard film. The last one was like a PG-13 movie. I don't know what they ended up showing. This time it was R-rated, so I was like, all right, that piqued my interest a little bit. The runtime was like an hour and 45 minutes, and for me, because, you know, I'm going to look at you, I like to play games. So I started looking at what movies are coming out soon, was able to kind of put it down to being one of two movies, one of three, really, but I didn't think the first Omen was going to be the one that they would go with for that. And plus that has a 2-hour runtime. So it was between Abigail and Sting. Abigail looks like a movie in which, like, a bunch of kidnappers, like, they try to kidnap a little girl and hold her ransom for, like, $10 million. The trick is they got to keep her in a house for 24 hours. Well, surprise, surprise, kidnappers, the little girl is a vampire. That one looks like a fun little ride. I think it's the same people that made the one with the bride and the game and all that stuff. I always forget the name of it. The one where she gets married into the family and they're wealthy because they're
Ready or Not? Radio Silence.
Yes, Yes. I think it's the same people that made that. So it definitely has got that same aesthetic. Looks like a fun, funny, action-y type of gore fest, though, because it definitely, there's blood all over the fucking trailer. The other movie that I knew that was coming was Sting, so that was my other guess. And sure enough, we got into the theater, and that was that. And I was quite thrilled because I had the Ghoul Girl and the Little Monster with me. I was like, all right, we're going to be there at that theater or at that mall for boxing anyway, so why don't we just transition right into the movie? Knowing that Sting was possibly one of the movies to come up, and also knowing that the two of them are deathly afraid of spiders, I was like, this is perfect, because if that movie comes up, I just know that it's going to be the two of them, like, covering their faces for the majority of the movie. But ultimately, they both, to quote the Ghoul Girl, unfortunately, the movie is kind of so silly and so outlandish, you can't even be scared of it. For me, it walked a line. It's definitely not arachnophobia. It tries to walk a line of being funny in some regards, but then at the same time, too, and the reason why it's R-rated is there's parts where you can see that there was a body horror movie in here. And that is what I wish they went with, because there are certain sequences within that movie where even I'm like, ooh, that's fucking gnarly. And, like, had the film just gone in that one direction, I would have probably went with it a hell of a lot more. But like I said, ultimately it kind of just falls flat because it never finds its identity. And it didn't seem like the audience was all that thrilled with it either. You know, there were a couple giggles here and there in the movie, but for the most part, when the movie ended, everybody was like, "Up, we're fucking out." You know, no applause, no clapping, no cheering or anything. But it was nice to be in a fucking packed house. You know, so I guess everybody is starting to dig this whole seen unseen thing. You know.
Yeah, that's very fucking cool. And Dean, if you don't mind, I want to talk to the ghoul for a little while about Ghostbusters: Frozen Empire. Because we both saw.
Yeah, you might want to pull away.
All right.
We're not going to do spoilers.
Yeah, that's
totally
fine.
As
long as there's not spoilers, I'm not going to be offended.
No.
You know, if I learn about a cast member.
Like Walter Peck?
Please,
yeah.
Feel free to talk about the Empire, the Frozen Empire. I do plan on seeing it, so please, like, let's have a little, a little brevity here.
I think we need to. So from my standpoint, this was my first movie date. This was my first movie date with Audrey, my girlfriend. So we went to go see it. She wore my Ghostbusters pin. She was so excited to see it. One of the guys that worked at the theater, the manager, took our picture in front of the Ghostbusters poster. It was very cool. We went into it. She saw Ghostbusters Afterlife and was kind of the same point I was with Egon, where she kind of got teared up a little bit, you know, seeing him at the end. So we went to go see Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, and I was impressed. Like, I kind of liked it a little bit more than Afterlife. I felt like it was a total kind of live-action, real Ghostbusters movie. There's a lot of nods to real Ghostbusters in that. I had some gripes that I talked to the ghoul about, and I think the ghoul and I kind of came up with the consensus that this should have been two movies. It would have been better if it was broken up, but it seemed like in the third act, they were at a rush. Like, we have to fucking wrap this movie up. So let's wrap it up. Let's go real quick, and then we're going to be out. And, yeah, let's hopefully make another one. But I do love that third act because it just brought me back to Ghostbusters 84, where it's like, yep, you know, we're in this and we're going on another job. But overall, I just had a great time. From start to finish, I was like that little kid again in the theater seeing Ghostbusters 2 in 89. And I just had really kind of just small gripes. But overall, I thought it was just a lot of fun. And we'll go into a ghoul because I'm sure you have your thoughts, but I want to hear what you thought.
I went Thursday, night of release, and I took the little ones. I took Sam with me. I had thought she had seen Afterlife. She had not. This was her first Ghostbusters film.
Oh, okay.
Assumed she had saw, because I could have sworn she watched Afterlife, not in the theater, but with us at home, and, you know, especially because it's got, you know, Mike from fucking Stranger Things in it, so. But no, she hadn't. She found the movie enjoyable, but, like, she didn't come away from the film with that same... But that same level of like love and affection as I know we all came away with it from like the very first Ghostbusters movie in 84 and, you know, for 89. And what I would assume were certain kids from, you know, Afterlife's, you know, fan base. It seems like Afterlife has developed a very strong fan base, you know, all I see are Ghostbusters and Ghost Corps and like all these groups that have like come together and now are just involved with the Ghostbusters community as the production company itself is. For me, I felt that the movie got progressively weaker as it went along. I felt like there was too many cast members. I feel like there wasn't enough story filling in for all of the amount of cast that you got, even from just minute standpoints, you know, like even small things. I know you can't dedicate all the attention to one, you know, to every single character. Like, not everybody's going to get a major story arc. But they just didn't give specific characters like anything to do, to the point like it felt like there was really no point in them being there other than their fucking faces showing up and saying hi. And this isn't just, you know, for me, it wasn't just the old heads, you know what I mean? Like, this is some of the newer cast where it was like, well, that didn't even make sense to me. You know, first act, I thought things kicked off strong. Second act, I started to feel like, okay. And then by the third act, it was like, hey, here it is. Bye. And, you know, and I know that kind of follows the thing. That follows the end with the 1984 movie. You know what I mean? But, like, if you watch the 84 film, everything built up to that. Everything got to that point. And all the guns, everything was all, like, was in line for it. You know, Pavlov's gun. Chekhov's gun was there.
Yeah.
You know, so when you reach the end of that first movie, like, it was like, oh, okay, cool. It all made perfect sense, at least to my fucking childlike wonder watching it, and still to this day when I watch that movie. You know, but, again, ultimately, when I watched this film, did I come away feeling, like, happy? Was I smiling? Yes, I was. I came away from Ghostbusters. I did not feel like I saw a bad movie. I just feel like I saw a movie that could have been done differently and might have had a little more gravitas to it had it been done that way.
Gravitas.
Keeper Sutherland's favorite word.
Yeah. And you're completely right, Ghoul. Like, and I told you, Ghoul, when I had seen that, I was like, there are certain characters in this movie that are legacy characters that's just kind of like, it's fine they're in this movie, but they're not needed. Like, it's fine. Like, they're here, obviously, for a purpose because they're OG, but I could have done without them. Like, I kind of want to see a Ghostbusters movie without having these characters in the movie. Like, I kind of want to see a Ghostbusters movie with a new crew, you know? Just
you got that in 2016, homie.
Yeah, not so much. I felt like it was a lot more in Frozen Empire, where it was kind of like they have to be here. And it's like, well, they don't, though. Like, they don't need to be here. Like, you know,
No. What the Dean is saying is in the 2016 film, you got an entirely new, like, you know what I mean?
A whole new crew.
That had nothing to do with the original movie.
And a whole new crew.
I get that, you know, but I felt like with Frozen Empire, it was kind of fan service at a certain point. And I think I brought that up to you in tech school, where it was just like, these characters are just fan service. Like, it's just, they don't need to be here. There's no reason for them to be in the movie, but it's fan service. It's like they have to. And I would have been fine without them being in it. I'm trying to walk the line because
I know.
Dean hasn't seen
it
yet.
I know. There's all spoilers that we want to be throwing out. So, you know what? We'll hold off on this conversation until after the Dean has seen the film.
Absolutely.
Or if at one point, Dean hasn't seen it, well, we'll just cover it for an episode of the show.
Oh, I would love that. Yeah, we should definitely cover Frozen Empire for an episode. Like, I would pay for that. So, I'm going to get the Blu-ray anyway. So, but yes, Dean, please see it. And then we'll cover it on the show. We'll just make an episode.
It's certainly in my plans to see it, and I'm really going to try. I make no promises, but I'm really going to try to get out to the theater and see it in the theater as I would like to. I didn't
Which means
see
he ain't seeing it
after. What's that?
If you
think back over the last couple of years, I have gone out and by myself, and I've seen many movies that we talk about on the show in the theater. I've seen the new Exorcist. I saw all the Halloweens. I went and saw the Exorcist original and saw Christine the original. And like I go to the movies by myself like regularly. It's just right now my schedule is very busy and I want to go see it. This is not a case of me saying, oh, I want to go see it and never do. I've made an effort to get to the movies, man.
So, okay, hold on, though. You have, and I do understand this, and I'm not disagreeing with you right there, but even going by some of the words that you just said, in the last 2 years, with the efforts that you've made to go to the movies more often, or however many years, right, I do have a question. Have you gone to the theater more to see films that you've already seen or possibly own than new films that have just come out?
No. Good question.
No. There's definitely been a good handful of those Fathom events, one that I've go to, but no, like I went and saw, I would have to like look at the list of movies by year, but like I went and saw Dial of Destiny, like the new movies that come out that I want to see, like I make
I'm
the point to
that.
Go and see, you know, so am I. No, I'm not.
Ghostbusters isn't one of those movies.
No, it is. I'm going to try and get out to see it sometime. I don't know that I'm going to make it this week, but I'm definitely going to try to get out. Next week, I got to just look at my hockey schedule for Monday or Tuesday, and I might try to get out and see it like Tuesday afternoon, like right after work or something. Like I'm not guaranteeing that it's going to happen, but like I haven't looked at the timing yet, but it's on my agenda to look at it this weekend to see when I can get to it, like next week.
Yeah, it's a matter of when you can see it. So I believe you. I'm with you, D man. I know you're a Ghostbusters fan. I am Team Dean, man.
Let's not forget that this, the year 2024, as I have stated on every episode of the show,
this is my year of
actually watching shit where I no longer will endlessly scroll the streamings trying to figure out something to watch, and I will purposely watch things that I have always wanted to watch, like I have talked about early. Starting in the last couple days of 2023 through January, I watched all four seasons of Banshee. Last night, I completed the fourth season. I finished the fourth season of The Wire and have one more season to go. And I'm already trying to decide what's next. I might take a break from series and catch up on some movies from the past couple years that I've wanted to see. But the year 2024 is my year of actually watching shit. So,
I love it. It's your year, baby.
And as far as you
Hold
also were talking about late night at yes, as far as late night with the devil, which I really look forward to seeing also
yeah,
that
too.
Is one that I'm not gonna get out to the theater for that one because
I know I'm not
one it's coming to Shudder so soon and that for that kind of movie. Like the TV that I have right now like looks beautiful and it has the built-in Bluetooth, and when I put on my good Bluetooth headphones to watch stuff at night, like one, it doesn't have that weird fucking volume shit that all of the streamers have where like the action is happening and it's super loud, but then when it's talking it's like super fucking quiet. Like everything sounds fucking great in my headphones. So that's one that I look forward to. Like one second. and then I will hear your explanation. But for Late Night with the Devil, like, I'm looking forward to, like, getting fucking blazed at night and turning off the fucking lights and strapping into my fucking headphones and watching it. But go ahead, Ghoul.
So, yeah, the reason why you're having your volume issues with that is all of these things that are coming through the streaming services, they're set for 5.1 surround or more. So, in other words, when they're putting it through the streaming service, the audio is getting sent, even though it's only going to your TV, it's getting sent out as if it was going to other speakers, so that fucks up the balance. If you check your TV settings, there might be a setting in there that says volume equalizer or something to that effect, and that should level
right.
out your sound so that you actually get your all your sounds. What I did find on my television with that, with certain streaming services, though, sometimes it throws off the lips, like the actual speaking of the people on screen by like the fraction of a second. That for me is enough for me to notice that there's like a tiny delay in like something they're saying versus how I'm hearing it versus what I'm seeing. And that fucks with my head a little bit. So, you know, that's why when you use your headphones, you're not getting that same thing, 'cause you have full, you're getting the full channel through your headset when you're doing it.
Gotcha.
Well, like I said, it might be,
but yeah, man, like when I'm in my Bluetooth speakers, like watching shit, like I said, I've been watching The Wire every night, like 1 to 2 episodes every night. And, like, you know, it takes place in the streets of Baltimore, and there's, like, drug deals and street people all over the place. Like, I swear, man, like, the two characters are, like, talking on the corner, and, like, the cameras are right up close, and, like, you can hear, like, people that are, like, in the alley having, like, a little conversation, like, very faintly and quietly. Like, shit sounds fucking perfect, and that's why I'm really looking forward to watching Late Night with the Devil in that situation.
Yeah, I've got a expensive headset for the PlayStation, a SteelSeries headset. So it's got full 3D Bluetooth fucking audio sound in it. It's fun, like the spatial sound in there is fucking ridiculous. It's like bonkers, you know. Like you hear like a car will pass by and like it sounds like it's like right fucking behind you and shit, you know.
Yeah, I have a different headset for gaming. That has like the built-in mic, so you can like play and talk to people that you're playing with. And not that I ever do that, but like that shit, I did research about like the top like gaming headphones in my budget at the time, and that shit sounds fucking stupid. It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. 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 I agree.
Okay, so okay. No, go ahead, Ghoul.
Oh, I was just gonna say, you know, like I know another movie I did go see this weekend was Immaculate.
That's literally my next question. Because I want to take Audrey to see that, because I love nunsploitation movies.
Mm-hmm.
Is it worth it?
I think so. You know,
which one?
Yeah.
Immaculate. Starring Sydney Sweeney.
Right.
You know, this has been a great year so far. I have to say, it's been a great year for horror releases. And I'm just talking 2024.
Absolutely.
Like, it seems like there were just, it's just like this flood of, like, horror films. And I have to say, they have, like, if the execution isn't what's interesting, then it's just a good movie in general. You know what I mean? And I say that for, like, Lisa Frankenstein.
Yep.
Lisa Frankenstein, you know,
I love
the execution of the film was entertaining. Like, whatever weaknesses the film had were kind of hidden by how the movie was done. You know, so like, I thought that was great, you know? But yeah, Immaculate was one of those where it was like, okay, like I said, Late Night of the Devil, only coming on late at night. Here's Immaculate, an R-rated film, and a fucking 10:15 showing, you know, in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, that's perfect for me. I'm going to drop my kid off at work, and then I'm going to go home real quick, pick up a bagel, and then fucking head to the theater, nice, bushy-tailed and bright-eyed and ready to fucking go. You know, and I think you will definitely like it. It has a lot of it's got like almost like a 70s style religious horror feel to it.
Oh my God, really?
With a nice slow burn to work its way up. But it still does feel like a new movie, which is also very, very, it was entertaining. And when it goes to certain places, it fucking goes there. And you're like, ooh, okay.
Oh my God.
So I think you'll like it. I hope I'm right. You know, my luck, you'll go watch it. You'll be like, that was the biggest fucking piece of shit I ever seen. But I enjoyed it. I know audiences have been really liking it, so.
Yeah, no, I'm really looking forward to seeing it because it hits all those marks for me for nunsploitation movies. Like, we covered the Devils on the podcast not that long ago. Like, that's the ultimate nunsploitation movie for me. So I was kind of hoping it would hit all those marks, and I told Audrey about it, and she was like, we need to see that. And I was like, the Gore already did, so I'm kind of hoping that you liked it. So, yeah.
The Ghoul approves.
See this weekend.
The Ghoul definitely approves.
So, awesome. All right. So, Dean, it's your time to shine. We have horror news to talk about. What are we talking about?
Oh, there's just so much. But first, let us talk about everyone's favorite little doll. And, of course, I'm talking about Chucky. Not the King's real doll. Now.
She's beautiful. Gigi.
As the very successful and popular Chucky series continues to entertain audiences across the horror universe, Don Mancini has revealed that he is currently also working on another Chucky movie. When talking to the Scream Dreams podcast, Mancini said, I'm actually in the early stages of working on a new Chucky movie. And he said that this movie is designed to work in tandem with the TV show, you know, the ongoing attempt to try to conquer mm-hmm. the universe with Chucky. Obviously, there's been a lot of chatter about whether Chucky will go to space, that lots of fans want Chucky to go to space. Mancini was not committal about whether that will happen or not, but he does say that he does have an idea for that if that were going to happen. Again, he said this new Chucky movie is still just in the early stages, but you know the second half of the third season of the Chucky series will debut really soon, coming up on April 10th. So plenty of Chucky content for those of you that are, you know, fans of the good guys.
I am. I can't wait because I know that John Waters signed up to be the creator of the Good Guy Dolls for season 3. So I can't wait for John Waters to come back because he was in See the Chucky as a paparazzi, but he's actually going to be the creator of the Good Guy Dolls for season 3 of Chucky. So. Yeah, I know you guys haven't seen it, but yeah, you guys got to check it out. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, again, it's. I watched like the first episode or two, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
yeah.
I was. It was never a matter of me not liking what I'm watching. It's just that my attention span has been like, just when things click for me, I like try to stay locked on them so that I can actually like finish or complete them. Because it seems like lately what's mm-hmm. been happening is like I'll watch something and then like after a bit I guess maybe the whole binge watching thing is finally like wore its course on me because anytime I'm trying to binge something now, by the time I hit like the halfway point, I'm like, yeah, I'm good. I know where it's going or I've seen it 1,000 times. It doesn't matter if it's fucking new. Like I already know the story.
Yeah. But, you know, I think you'll enjoy it overall. It's an investment. But I think you and the Dean are watching The Ones That Lived, the Walking Dead series. Have you guys caught up on that? Like,
yes,
I have no idea.
So
you guys want to talk about that?
I will jump in real quick because 2 weeks ago, the Ghoul had jumped ahead of me and was an episode ahead. And then I had jumped back ahead of the Ghoul. So I think heading into this Sunday's episode, I believe I was at the last I checked in with the Ghoul, I was one episode ahead unless he had caught up. But I had become The Wire is always portrayed as, you know, maybe the second best HBO show ever next to The Sopranos. And, you know, there's been articles and lookbacks and all of this chatter about The Wire. So that's one of the things that led me to watch it. And, you know, through the first three seasons, kind of mostly underwhelmed compared to the esteem that I think that the general public holds the show in. But I became much more engrossed in the fourth season, since the characters being focused on in the fourth season and the setting of the fourth season took place in an inner city in Baltimore, but in an inner city urban middle school, which I have years of firsthand experience working on. And I was totally engrossed in that aspect of the story, because I truly believe that the representation of an inner city middle school, from the teachers to the administration, to how it's viewed by the local politicians, to what the kids look, sound, and act like, has never been more represented authentically in any other format. It was like reliving fucking trauma. So I was way engrossed in season four, and in the time when I would have watched The Ones Who Live, I couldn't stop watching season four, which I finished last night. So it is my plan to watch this most recent episode of The Ones Who Live after our show this evening. So I am not caught up, but I am into it thus far.
Cool.
How many episodes are out currently? Five?
I believe the one that came this Sunday, maybe it was the fifth one. There's going to be six,
okay.
But I believe the one that just came the fifth one. Yeah.
Okay. So then I have not seen the one from this Sunday yet. That's all. I've seen four. I've seen four of them.
Okay.
I think you and me the two of us are at the same exact point.
Got it. So we're all we're all caught up.
So basically,
I'm into
saw
it.
The whole thing in the smart people's apartment complex between Rick and Michonne.
Yes.
Figure out who's staying after the helicopter crash and all that fun stuff.
Yep.
Okay.
All of that.
So,
yeah.
So yeah, we are exactly at the same location.
Yeah, man, I'm into it. I like it.
That's good.
Again, like I've told you, it does really go to show how important Andrew Lincoln is to the series and what he brings to this universe as an actor, because I am 100% more invested in this series than most of the end of the actual Walking Dead series, and definitely more so than any of the spinoffs. So.
Yeah, that's why I gave up on the show when he left. I was like, yep, I'm out. That shows you how important he is as a character. So it's great. You know, I still have to finish it. I might just buy the set on Walmart. You know, they have the complete Walking Dead series. Might just do it and watch the rest of the series and then go into this one. All right, Dean, what else are we talking about?
We have, again, I know that the Goo Girl's mom has, she added AMC Plus to her her Amazon account, so we can just watch it through Prime on there. And again, I will, once we're done with this, we'll probably go back at some point and finish Dead City, just to get it done. We have to watch Daryl, you know, Sam keeps telling us that, you know, we need to see it, that it was so good, blah, 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 blah.
Daryl,
again,
Daryl Dixon, yeah, all right, gotcha.
Yeah, like, for me, again, like, she's into the Daryl character like everybody was, like, at the earlier points, like when we went to Monster Mania that time, and the fucking line was, like, 8 hours long for people to go see Daryl, you know. For me, like, that novelty wore off for me a long time ago with the Daryl character. So I really don't see myself finding that show to be all that great either. But, you know, I'll still give it a whirl.
Yeah, I haven't even watched that one yet at all.
Well, something to catch up on. But, all right, Dean, what else are we talking about?
Last time we talked about Scream 7, I had said how Neve Campbell's return to the role of Sidney Prescott was officially confirmed, and that original Scream film director Kevin Williamson was returning to direct. But since that time that we talked about that, it is also now official that Patrick Dempsey is actually confirmed to be in talks, Cade, from the third film. And that goes along with the fact that it is never been officially stated, but there are many fans of the franchise who believe that that character is actually the character that Sidney Prescott is married to, because in the fifth film, Sidney Prescott references her husband, Mark. So there are those that believe that that would be Detective Mark Kincaid as her husband. But Patrick Dempsey is in talks to return. We had kind of mentioned this here and there before after everything went down with what was supposed to happen. And it only makes sense to me that they would be working hard to try to bring back some of these other characters just to keep people kind of interested and excited about what is going to come next, given all of the controversial exits, after the most recent film. So that's what's going on right now in the world of Scream.
So are you guys excited that there might be a Scream 7? Like Ghoul, Dean?
I mean, I don't know that if I would use the term excited. Like everyone, love the original film and have never been all that crazy about everything that came after it. I saw the first three. I actually have never seen the fourth one. I watched the fifth one because we talked about it for the show, and liked it for the most part, and that caused me because the next one came so quickly. I actually went to the theater and saw it, and and it was fine. These are not films that I love. If there's another one, I'm sure I'll see it. I don't know if I would be like, oh, I'm so excited that there's going to be a Scream 7, but I'll certainly go see it or see it when it comes out. I feel like from the storyline that was introduced in the fifth film, I was, for the most part, invested enough to carry over to the sixth one. And, now I'm curious to see what happens. So I don't know if I would use the word excited.
Who about you, Ghoul?
Again, I've said this 1,000 times in regards to Scream, and it's like I feel like with so many other franchises, the first film is the only one you really need to see. Did I enjoy little bits and pieces of, I do like four, and to some extent there's things about five and six that I found fun, but for various other reasons, it's not so much that it's as good as the original film. It's just it's fun to see a horror movie that reminds me of an earlier time in my life. And that was thrill for it. I was happy that they were finally kind of going away from the original characters, and we were going to off some of them and start bringing in these new characters. But now it's everything's got to go back and get reset. So now we're going to reboot it and bring it back to Sidney and company. And, it's the seventh movie. We already made the joke. It's the seventh film. It's time to go meta. This is now time to go, a new nightmare with it. Let the whole thing have been a film the entire time. There was never Stab was a series within the movie series that was Scream, and it's going to be Nev Campbell as Nev Campbell, not, Nev Campbell as Sidney Prescott. If you really want to do homage to, Wes Craven and all that stuff, then go that route with it. Because other than that, I really don't I don't care. Will I go see it? Of course I will. I have A-list. I get to see fucking movies all the time. So, I'm going tomorrow to see Kong vs. Godzilla in 3D. I can't fucking wait. So because of that, it's a no-brainer that I'm going to go see it. Am I excited for it? No. It's another film that's going to come out, and maybe I'll make it a date night or something like that. But we'll see. We'll see what happens and when it finally gets out.
Yeah. I haven't had fun with Scream since Part 2. I always said, Part 2 was kind of the way to send it off. But, of course, you always want more, so I still think that Scream 3 is the lowest point of the series. It just didn't make any sense. It was just bad. Part 4 is okay. 5, again, it's just trying to get into the new era of horror movies. And, Part 6, I had a really hard time with. But, again, like you had said, Ghoul, are we going to see it? Fuck yeah. We'll be there. You know, as soon as it comes out, we'll be in the theater to see it. But does it make it a good movie? Probably not. But either way, like, it's just once I think Wes kind of passed away, like, Scream should just died out. Like, he was kind of the guy behind it, but we'll see. It's just it's a complicated thing because of the whole Melissa Barrera thing and Jenna Ortega. Here's another thing, guys. Did you guys see the Beetlejuice teaser they released?
Yes.
What did you guys think of it? Because I was just kind of like, eh. I really just kind of had a nonplussed kind of reaction to it.
Go ahead, Dean. What do you got?
So this is what I got. It wasn't a very long trailer, and I feel like they gave just enough to, give a little taste and flavor of what this new edition is going to be like, and I felt it did a good job of capturing the kind of look and feel of the original film, which, of course, is what Tim Burton is good at. How it will turn out as a whole film thus far, who knows? I don't know that I would be running out to the theater to see this, but I'm sure I'll take a look when it hits streaming.
Cool.
I'm, again, just like I said with Scream, am I going to be there seeing Beetlejuice 2? Fucking A, I will. You know, it's fucking Beetlejuice. I am actually looking forward to it. I thought the teaser, it's a teaser. So it was nice to see the town. It was nice to see the bridge. It was nice to see, you know, the model. And,
yeah.
You know, and out comes, you know, Keaton. Looking Keaton, you know, he's old. You know, the dude's gotten older. they could dress him up as Beetlejuice again, but, like, you know, you can still tell that he is an older actor. So what that will translate to in regards to the Beetlejuice character, we shall see, you know? Like, a lot of people, I think, kind of because, especially the people from our generation who were, you know, around when Beetlejuice came out. Like, I remember seeing Beetlejuice in theaters. My cousin Dana wanted to do that for her birthday, and, like, that's the movie where we went and saw Beetlejuice, you know, at the time. I remember the theater was the one off of, the Belt Parkway. I forget what the exit number is, but there was a movie theater right off of that in Brooklyn. Like, I remember clear as day, like, literally going there, seeing it, finding the movie to be just oh so entertaining and really coming away, still finding it to be a lot of fun, you know? And then you got the Beetlejuice cartoon that comes out. All of these things that, like, paint Beetlejuice as, like, the good guy. You know, it wasn't until going back a couple of years later with a little bit of an older head while watching Beetlejuice, you kind of realize Beetlejuice is the bad guy of that movie. The cartoon series makes him the good guy. But the movie, he's kind of the fucking villain, you know? So it was like, oh, okay, cool. So, like, I'm looking forward to seeing how are they going to play that. Are they going to go with Beetlejuice as the anti-hero? Or are we going to get, like, true Beetlejuice again, where he's really not all that good of a person? You know, obviously, he's not all that good of an undead.
Yeah. You know, and it was one of those things where I saw the teaser. I was excited for it because I was like, oh, my God, Beetlejuice 2 is finally here. I didn't get those feels that I got when I saw Michael Keaton as Batman for The Flash. Like, when he showed up and he's like, yeah, I'm Batman. Like, I fucking got goosebumps. I was like, oh, my God, we're here. Like, we're back. Like, you know, I just – when he showed up as Beetlejuice, I was like, oh, kind of feels forced. I don't know. I'm hoping it's a good movie. I'm hoping it's going to be fun. I kind of want Beetlejuice to be the bad guy again, like you said, Ghoul. But, yeah, I didn't get those feels like I did when I saw Michael Keaton back in the Batman suit. You know? I was like, I don't know. Because I love Beetlejuice, but at the same time, like, to see him back in the bat suit, like, I felt like that was much more important than seeing him back in that black and white striped suit.
100%. I mean, come on. Michael Keaton as Batman overall is a more iconic character than Michael Keaton as Beetlejuice. You know, Beetlejuice was a offshoot, quirky, fun role and character for a movie that is ultimately a cult classic. Tim Burton's Batman is one of the most important films of the 80s. You know, late 80s, granted, but it is. It's one of the most important films of the 80s. Batman, it made Batman, as far as being a film character, a serious box office contender. It went on to show that you can make a comic book movie without it being comic book gimmicky. Now, don't tell that to Joel Schumacher, who decided to go on and make those fucking, you know, Batman and Robin and Batman Forever fucking, you know, bat nipples and all that fucking zany bullshit. But, you know, without having 1989's Batman, we never get movies like The Dark Knight and Batman Begins and Dark Knight Rises. They were all templates for films that would go on to be like, hey, we can treat this shit seriously, you know, because, again, if we don't get those, we don't get Joker. You know, we don't get a comic book movie that literally had a shot at winning Best Picture in the Oscars. You know, so who would have ever saw that fucking happening, you know, with Adam West's fucking Batman?
Oh, never. Never. Like, it just, it came out of fucking nowhere. And it fucking worked. like I said, like, seeing him in Batman and The Flash, like, it just works so well. Seeing those Beetlejuice, like, well, that's cool. Like, yeah, he's back, and the juice is back, you know, but no. I'm looking forward to seeing, hopefully, a full trailer.
I guarantee
it. We'll see.
The juice has never gone away.
But all right, then, what else are we talking about today?
Let's see. We have Fear Street back in 2021 had the Netflix Fear Street trilogy, and they say now that Netflix is bringing the next edition to the Fear Street umbrella with Fear Street Prom Queen. It's going to be based on the 1992 Fear Street book, The Prom Queen. It is going
King
to
was
be
the Prom Queen.
It's going to be directed by Matthew Palmer, who is the director of the Netflix film Calibre. And they've also announced some casting. This Fear Street Prom Queen will feature Catherine Watterson, who is in Alien Covenant, Lily Taylor from The Conjuring, amongst other things, Oz Stryker himself, Chris Klein from American Pie, amongst others. No release date just yet, but Fear Street Prom Queen is on the way from Netflix. You know, there being something like 100 different books or something under the Fear Street banner, Netflix has said that when Netflix put out the Fear Street trilogy, you know, they also had said that that was not going to be the end and that there is tons of material to mine to continue to bring Fear Street content to their streaming service.
Well, there is a ton. So I'm glad that they're going with Prom Queen, because Prom Queen was a great book, because I had all the Fear Street books when I was a kid. I wish I still had them. Yeah. Like, Fear Street was like teenage horror. It was really well done. R.L. Stine moving away from Goosebumps, which is more kid-friendly, and then moving into teen horror with Fear Street. But I'm looking forward to it, because I don't know if you guys saw the Fear Street movies that came out on Netflix, but I thought they were really well done.
Yeah, they were the ones where it was like the different years, right?
Yes.
Yeah, 94, 78, and like 1886.
It was very enjoyable.
Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping for more of that, but we'll see. Yeah, I'm just looking forward to it. But all right, Dean, what's next?
So,
Dean, what's next?
We all know about how I'm going to tell
what
you.
What do we know?
We all know about the colossal error made upon the initial debut to the world of Night of the Living Dead, which placed it immediately into the public domain. We've talked about this many times and how over the years there's been all kinds of versions, variations, remakes, sequels, animations, colorizations, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There are a lot of different things going on in the world of Night of the Living Dead. The George Romero Foundation teaming up on a podcast sequel to the Night of the Living Dead that's called The Dead. Miyatu Jusu is directing a film sequel for MGM. Greg Nicotero is making a movie about the making of Night of the Living Dead. But that is just a lead up to what I'm going to tell you about, which is the upcoming film Festival of the Living Dead, which is directed by the Saska sisters and will be coming to the Tubi streaming service on April 5th. So the Saska sisters have done their own sequel to Night of the Living Dead called Festival of the Dead, and you will be able to see it on Tubi in just a week's time.
All this time, I thought they were too busy with that Ripperverse thing that they've been doing with the comic book strip, and they got some kind of movie coming out of that, I think, too.
They do. They've been really promoting that, but yeah, they've been talking about the Living Dead movie for a while, so the fact that it's going to be on Tubi in a month, man, you know, might be a pick. You know, it's going to be interesting. I love the Saskas, so.
Oh yeah, those
I can't
twisted
wait to see
twins.
It.
I love those babies, you know. But yeah, I have an interesting hypothetical for you. It just literally like crossed my path, so I had to share it with you. You know me. I love what ifs, right? So listen, instead of right, you now ejaculate the last thing you drank. So what is it that you're ejaculating?
Come?
Well, no. It's
my lady.
What was the last thing you drank?
Come. That's what I drank.
That was the last thing you drank?
Yeah.
Really? All right. Hey, ladies. Everybody's got their own thing, man.
It gets me hard,
man.
There
we go. What about you, Dean? What would you be shooting out?
What's that?
What would you be shooting out, man? What's the last thing you drank?
White wine.
Oh, so fancy. I'd be dripping out a fucking mix of kombucha and coffee. So I got one or the other. I'm a dual threat right now.
Wow. I'll stick with my comb.
I know. Interesting stuff. That's pictures that cross my path. You know, we're always groundbreaking over here. So,
all right, Dean. What else are we talking about?
So, we had talked, or the ghoul had talked earlier about Sydney Sweeney, who there's been so much kind of buzz about lately. But you know, over the years, there has been much talk about a new modernized remake, reboot, et cetera, of the famous Jane Fonda vehicle, Barbarella. And over the years, Rose McGowan has been attached. Halle Berry has been attached. Kate Beckinsale has been attached. But now it seems that officially going into production is going to be a new version of Barbarella starring Sydney Sweeney. She was, you know, talking on the Happy, Sad, Confused podcast about the project and how that she is attached and that it is happening. And while the rumor has been going around, when asked the question directly, she would not answer. And that question is Edgar Wright going to be directing this version of Barbarella? Because apparently that has been the rumor. So an upcoming Sydney Sweeney version of Barbarella, whether Edgar Wright is directing is not known at this time.
That'd be cool. I've never seen Barbarella. I've seen pieces of it, but I've never seen it from start to finish. So why not? You know, Sydney Sweeney with those big fucking hangers are, why not?
I just love all the fucking the reports coming out because, like, I guess at some point, supposedly, they were, like, kind of setting her up to be, like, the poster child for, like, the Republican and conservative party. And then Immaculate came out, and that like, in which a nun gets fucking impregnated. Like, you know, it was, like, supposedly, like, the fucking conservatives had, like, a total meltdown where it was, like, oh, it's the liberal left. The liberal left, they saw that Sydney Sweeney was joining us, so they had to cast her in a movie to make her a whore. And it was just, like, what do you think? She had no choice
She's
in that.
She's a
nun whore. Come on now. She's a nut whore. I've never seen Barbarella either. It's like one of those where, like, obviously I know of it. I've seen bits and pieces of it whenever, like, you know, they show, like, oh, the history of movies. And it's like, it feels like it was, like, my dad's jerk-off material type of deal. You know what I mean? So, like, that's something that they did make an updated version of it. Maybe
that
I
might
check
be
it
like,
out.
That actually might more be, like, maybe even your grandfather's jerk-off material. Because the only frame of reference that I really kind of have for that is that at this time, Howard Stern is 70, and, you know, he's talked many times over the years about how his dad took him to see that in the theater when he was a kid, and it was, like, the most awkward, embarrassing situation ever. One, because, like, his dad never did shit with him, and two, because of Barbarella. So I feel like, given those ages, I feel like that was probably our grandfather's fucking spank bank material.
Definitely.
I mean,
might have been.
Okay, so here's the thing. No. Okay, so here's the thing, right? Remember, when we're talking about Howard Stern, we're always talking about embellishment and blowing things up a little bit, right? Barbarella came out in 1968. Stern,
all right, so my dad was 21,
54.
So you're right. My dad
Stern
was
is
21 in 68.
He's born in 54. He was 14 years old at the time. Is that an uncomfortable movie to sit through with your old man? Of course it is. But his old man was probably in his 40s by that point,
right,
too. You know what I mean? Remember, Howard's dad is a little bit, he was a little bit older. So definitely my dad was like, shit, my dad might have been, that might not even be my dad's level shit, because my dad might have been like 8 at that point.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
My mom
was
depending
born in 61,
on,
so.
So this came out in October of 1968, so my dad would have been 20 going on 21. Because my dad was born in 47.
I watched Wes House on the Left with my dad when I was 12, so. Shows you what I knew. This is great. He's like, wow, there's a lot of fucking shit in this movie. I'm like, yep, I love it. So, yep, I was always fucked up. He never got over that. He's like, remember when you showed me West House on the Left when you were 12? I'm like, yep. What the fuck's wrong with you? I don't know. So, we all have those. All right, Dean, what are you talking about?
You know, my dad, my first movie was Fade to Black. So, you know, like, hey, here you go, kid. Sit down, watch this, and see what you think.
I feel like any time I see information about this, I have to talk about it now. I feel like if this was not one of our picks a couple of weeks ago, I might have just disregarded this story completely. And of course I'm talking about everything having to do with the upcoming Deathstalker remake. Apparently the Deathstalker remake is going to involve a group of warriors called the Dreadites, as well as an ancient sorcerer named Necromonomon. Right now, and it is officially live, but right now there is a Kickstarter, and the Kickstarter is not to get the movie going, but the Kickstarter is specifically to raise money for director Stephen Kostansky's Action Pants Effects Company, because they want to be able to do an outstanding job creating all of the different monsters that are going to populate this film universe. And people must want to see this happen because the Kickstarter goal was set at 75K, and they have already raised almost $79,000 from 409 different backers. Now, I did not make a list here of everything a donation to the Kickstarter can get you, but I just have a couple of the more noticeable ones that I'll go through real quick. First, just a very small $10 donation will automatically have your name featured in the end credits. $50 will get you a limited edition copy of the VHS tape. $500 will get you an official Deathstalker Cult of Sidor sword. $1,000 will get you a light. $1,000 gets you a light of the Talon screen used prop. $2,000 a Scream used Dreadite mask. $3,000 an associated producer credit. $9,000 will get you a Pigman prosthetic mask from the original Deathstalker. And then, of course, the big one is the $10,000 donation, which will make you an executive producer. You'll get all the other shit being offered. You will get to go to the movie premiere with the cast and crew, you having to pay your own way to get there, of course, and so on and so forth. But a lot of movement, the Deathstalker Kickstarter reaching their goal for the special effects as that movie continues to move through production.
Wow. Get yourself a fucking sword, ghoul.
Yeah, you know what? Nah, I'm okay. Thank you, though. Don't get me wrong. You know, look, I'm certainly not against donating to any of these campaigns, but I'm certainly not dropping, you know, a hot five down just to get a sword. You know, like, if you want to tell me, like, you're going to give me a prop that was used to, like, penetrate, like, a hot chick on the show or something like that, then maybe I'll go for it, just so I can, like, sniff it while I'm whacking off or something. But aside from that, you know,
well,
nah.
Well, if you're in, if Blade Play is your thing these days, a quick few types of the button tells me, of the buttons here tells me that you can get a golden look ceremonial sword from India for $130.50 online.
Mm, there you go, Ghoul. So, you know, hey, man.
Very nice.
If Audrey and I decide to get married, that's the fucking wedding gift right there, man. Get us a fucking Deathstalker sword.
Prepared to be
carried. All right. So, what else are we talking about?
And then I, of course, want to mention this one. So last week, right here in this portion of our program, I talked about this mysterious secret project between Ryan Coogler and Michael B. Jordan that they were working on that supposedly was maybe a period piece and supposedly maybe having to do with vampires. And now I have some more information about this, even though what I'm going to say has been officially confirmed. So where I had said last week that there was something going to do with vampires, apparently this period piece is going to be taking place in the Deep South in the 1930s and is going to be featuring Michael B. Jordan in dual roles, and vampires are apparently going to be doing battle against the KKK. The additional rumor to that is that while this is a live-action film, there's going to be a very evident anime influence to this film, as Michael B. Jordan is a huge anime guy. So, again, this mysterious film of which nothing has been officially confirmed aside from Coogler and Jordan working on a project that Coogler wrote and is going to direct and that Jordan is going to star and will be released from Warner Brothers on March 7th, 2025. You know, nothing else that I said has officially been confirmed, but that is what the strong rumors seem to indicate at this time.
See what happens. Damn. All right. So is that it for you, Dean?
Yes.
Okay. So as we move away from Ryan Coogler, we're going into the 100 Acre Woods for Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey from 2023, directed by Reese Frake Waterfield. This is your pick tonight, Ghoul. So why don't you hit us with a plot synopsis and what you thought about it? Let's get honey with it.
Yo, man. Pooh and Piglet are fucked up. Something.
Fucking.
something foul is afoot in the 100 Acre Woods. And yeah, it appears that Christopher Robin had to leave to go to college. And he unfortunately left Pooh and Piglet behind, along with all the other fun friends. Eeyore, Rabbit, Owl, all of them. Unfortunately, he did not leave them any food. And the poor animals in the 100 Acre Woods did not know how to fend for themselves.
We didn't even have any food to eat.
No food. Oh, bother. So what else are these lovely, talkative creatures to do besides contemplate life and love and all this general stuff? Well, they turned on one another, and basically Pooh and Piglet fucking and company. Well, the first person to go down was Eeyore. Of course.
So mad.
How else would it be done? You know, fucking of course. And that's exactly what Eeyore said. You know, I'm sure he looked at him and was like, "It figures. I'm the one that would go first." So basically, they fucking ate Eeyore, man. And this led to the animals and the creatures going feral. And years later, Christopher Robin returns, and well, shit is awry in the 100 Acre Woods. Like I said from the start, you know, Pooh and Piglet are fucking shit up. And then some other girls like show up at some point, and then we have a film that was done in like 9 days and it shows. You know, listen, Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey. Yeah, 1926 or whatever year the original Winnie the Pooh book came out, it went to public domain. And just like any time these things happen, you know, there are people just waiting to capitalize on these things. You know, listen, Disney has been capitalizing on Winnie the Pooh for fucking years. You know, they've owned the rights since, I think, like the 60s at some point. So with the original story, you know, the original characters going into public domain, it now means that anybody, as long as they avoid anything that makes them look like specifically the Disney characters, anybody can create anything with Winnie the Pooh.
Pinocchio, Unstrung.
And Piglet, and Eeyore, and all of the wonderful critters of the 100 Acre Woods. So what else would get made first? Well, a fucking horror movie. What would you expect? You know, come on now. It's like those memes that you see, you know what I mean, where it says, like, nobody and like me, you know. And of course, what do you see? You see fucking Winnie the Pooh's like head, like all fucking evil and looking shit. And it's like, okay, 2024. This is where we're at. Look, like I said, you know, this movie was kind of it had been trying to get in the works since 2022. It received a lot of viral buzz, so the studio was like, hey, we'll give you even some more money. Let's see what you can do. They worked a script. They rewrote a script because I guess it was too close to the Disney property. There was threats of like a lawsuit or some shit at that point. They scrapped it, went back, rewrote, reshot. Again, 9 days. They actually did the filming in the woods that were the inspiration for 100 Acre Woods, which I thought was kind of cool. But yeah, look, you definitely feel like this is an indie movie. You definitely feel like it was filmed in a few days. You know, there is literally no characters besides Pooh and Piglet, you know, and like they literally have nothing to do but fucking kill and eat people. You know, every character in this film is as thin as a piece of paper. you know, I did want to see the one's fucking ginormous tits, but she doesn't pull them out. So that was a drag.
Nope.
I wanted to see those bad boys, man. They were just all the chicks in this movie, I'm going to be a fucking total fucking, you know me, I'm a shit, I'm a guy, whatever. Misogynist, that's the word. You know, all of the women in this movie are definitely too British looking for my taste. You know, they all have a little bit of a funny facial feature. Their jawlines are a little bit too square for my taste. Their foreheads are like oddly shaped. And they have no asses. There's no girl in this movie that actually has an ass.
No.
Every one of them, their ass just goes like straight the fuck down. Even big boob fucking Tori, Lara, whatever the fuck her name is. Her fucking flotation devices were gigantic, man. She should have taken a little bit out of that, put a little bit in the back, and it would have balanced her out. But like, she was all tit, no fucking ass. But yeah, as far as like the film goes, it was an hour and a half, and I'll be honest, I felt it. You know, there were times I was watching it, and I was like, I wanted to look at my phone, I wanted to do something else. It just felt like there was just too much, like, we're just doing this because we can do this, and we're not putting any thought into it, you know? I feel like they were trying to get that lightning to strike a second time, almost like Terrifier did, where it was like, hey, we're going to just kind of fucking hit you with stuff. But, you know, they didn't go gory enough. They didn't go practical enough with it. At least with Terrifier, so much of that movie was like practical effect that you were kind of like, okay, you know what? I don't care that was a fucking puppet. It's still kind of fucked up that they did that. This, it was like, you know, the digital shots were definitely way too digital looking. And it was like, what the fucking, you know, we'll get to it when you go through the whole thing. Yeah, so when it was over, I was happy that it was over. I am interested to see the sequel, being that, like we said earlier, like, the sequel actually is getting like a lot of, so I'm interested to see what they did with some real money and maybe some time to actually write a script.
Mhm. So, Dean, what do you think about Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey?
You know, a lot similar on this one to what the ghoul had said, except where he talked about starting to look at his phone and whatnot while watching. I wanted to do that really badly, but unfortunately I was watching it on my phone, so I couldn't. So I was stuck with the viewing. Now, yeah, I felt like slow moving and kind of like cheap looking, which, you know, it was. And, you know, I from before seeing this, we had talked, I think last week, about the Pooniverse that's being created, and referenced some of those other films, like the Pinocchio Unstrung and Bambi the Reckoning, and there's a Peter Pan, like Death of Neverland, I don't know, whatever the fuck it was called, but like all of these child's tales that are now in the public domain, and they're gonna raiding the bookcase now to crank out these low budget features. And yeah, the lack of like gore and kills and pacing. And what's interesting, and you know, I'm going to imagine that it's okay to say this because it's, you know, I don't think we're so, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think we're so concerned about spoilers as far as the sequel to Blood and Honey is concerned. But from what I understand is that they have rectified, those different situations. I heard that it's pretty violent with kills and gore coming at a pretty rapid rate. So, you know, it does have me more interested to see that one than to revisit this one again. But, you know, I'm glad it was picked for the show, because truly I don't know that this is something that I ever would have chosen to watch on my own.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I had talked about Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey on the show before, where I said I enjoyed it. It was on Peacock before the ghoul picked it, and that's where I got to see it. It's a fun movie. Like, it's definitely kind of like Troma level, where it comes in with the gore, which I'm a fan of. Like, if you can get me a Troma level gore movie, I'm a fan of. I didn't have a lot of gripes with the movie, but I think the only gripes I had was that Winnie the Pooh and Piglet, they weren't really fleshed out when they became the killers. Like, they built up the whole story about why they became killers, but once you meet them, they're just kind of boring. Like, they're not interesting. Like, they're not Jason Voorhees, Michael Myers level killers, because they can't talk after a certain time. They decided they're not going to talk anymore because Christopher Robin abandoned them. And it's fine, but I just kind of felt like they were just very generic killers. Like, there was nothing very interesting about either of the killers in this movie. I know in the sequel, they're going to have Owl and Rabbit, you know, show up, which is fine. But at the same time, with this movie, it's like, yeah, they were very kind of just basic slashers. Like, there was nothing about either of them that I was like, okay, that's obviously Pooh. This is obviously Piglet. They just were kind of there, you know. And it was all about the kills and how interesting can you make the kills. And I love this movie also because it was kind of short. Like, once it got started, it fucking cooked. Like, it was just like, we're in this, we're going, and it was over. You know, there wasn't a whole lot of, we have to explain all this shit. It was just like, let's fucking go. A huge bonus for me. But let's get into it. It was a very short kind of narration for me, which I liked. So let's cook. So years ago, a young Christopher Robin befriended a group of anthropomorphic creatures, Owl, Rabbit, Eeyore, Piglet, and Winnie the Pooh, in the 100-acre wood. The group developed a strong bond, and years matured, and Christopher decided he would have to leave. Christopher decided that he needed to leave and enter college to become a doctor. Without him around to feed them, and with the arrival of winter, the creatures went into starvation. In order to survive, they settled on killing and eating Eeyore, which developed in them a hatred for humanity, especially for Christopher Robin. They vowed to return to their feral instincts and never speak again. And again, when I was a kid, Eeyore was my shit. I fucking love Eeyore because Eeyore is like, I fucking hate everything, man. I'm so fucking depressed. Like, I fucking love Eeyore, and to see him get killed, I was like, no, Eeyore. But at the same time, it makes sense, you know, because he is the most depressed one. So he's just going to be like, you know what, kill me. Eat me, be done. So we cut to 5 years later. Christopher, now as an adult, returns to the 100-acre wood, accompanied by his future wife, Mary, whom he wants to convince that Pooh and the others are real, but they find the place in a desolate state. While they search the grounds, the couple is ambushed by Piglet, who fatally strangles Mary with a chain. Pooh and Piglet then drag Christopher off into the woods, showing him Eeyore's skeletal remains and burning Mary's corpse in the process. So sometime later, university students Mary, Jessica, Alice, Zoe, and Lara run a cabin at the 100-acre wood so Maria can overcome a traumatic stalking experience, which we're going to get to. It felt like filler. It is filler, but we're going to get to it. So Tina, another friend, gets lost en route and comes across Pooh, who then grabs her as she's trying to hide in a barn and grinds her up with a wood chipper. And I love the fact they had to tear off her shirt. So it's like, hey, guys, we got tits in the movie. we have no other reason to show this, but we're going to show it anyway. You know, the shirt comes off. She's tossed into the wood chipper. The girls are then seen checking out the place that they've rented. And later they chat about Maria's traumatic stalker experience. One night, her stalkers stared at her from outside the house while she was in nothing but a flannel shirt and bra and underwear, of course. She would soon constantly feel being watched in her phone calls. One night, her stalker makes her way into her bedroom and tries to undress her. That was quite traumatic. So we cut back to the treehouse where Pooh, who has imprisoned Christopher, reminisces over their childhood and breaks down, brutally whipping with Christopher with Eeyore's tail, and then showering Christopher in Mary's blood, as you do, because this is a different kind of Pooh. As night falls, Pooh and Piglet ambush Lara, the girl that we talked about earlier with the ghoul, who has the great tits. She's settling down into a hot tub for the night. As she's relaxing, Pooh and Piglet chloroform her, and then they proceed to slowly drive a car over her head as she lays in a road. Ghoul, I thought that was like Sin for a second. I was like, is that Sin? Looks like her. as Pooh is behind the driver's, you know, behind the driver's wheel. I was like, oh, man.
Yeah, that was a Beamer, man. That was a Beamer. I could see why you would think it, the way the headlights were, but that was a BMW.
Yes.
Yep. You know, you're not going to see an American car in this because it's an English film anyway.
No.
So it's going to be all Euro style vehicles. But this is one of those where it was like, you know, I saw this kill coming. And, like, you know, when they got in the car, I'm like, oh, okay. And, you know, in my head, I'm thinking Toxic Avenger. We saw this years ago.
Yeah,
all you got to do is put a fucking, you know, put some kind of thing that's going to squish with some fucking red shit in it and some kind of brain matter, and it'll be great. And then it goes so digital. And it was like I would have preferred not to see the actress's face, like, screaming in pain. I would have just rather had seen, like, a fake dummy and watch its eyeballs, like, popping out and watch its fucking brain matter popping out. I would have been so much more satisfied than again, this digital blood spray that you see go everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, I got
brain
the Toxic
matter.
Avenger when you said that. Especially when the car drives over her face and you see the eyeball pop out. I was like, yeah, that's like Wood Kaufman is somewhere going, you know what? I like you guys. You get it. You know, it was coma level.
I love that fucking scene.
But it works so fucking well. Like, I was so happy with that because I was like, you know, we're getting some good gore. Even like I said with the Wood Chipper sequence. When she goes into the wood chipper and you just see the blood coming out of the wood chipper and then covering Pooh's face. I was like, you know
Dude,
what? We're having a good time.
She starts ramming her face, like, into the edge
yeah.
of it.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, you know, like, okay, I'm down with this. Like, I'm fine, you know. And then they do the wood chipper part, and sure, you know, you just, all you need is just some dangly legs and, you know, making it look like somebody's getting, full, you know, forced down and into there. Totally good on that scene. I would have. I'm sorry. I don't mean to laugh, but I'm literally watching otter. I'm watching an otter masturbate at the moment. Dude. The shit you see on the internet is just fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, I love the internet so much. But it also is one of those things where in the movie they tried to kind of give you some backstories for some of the characters. Like you have the one couple that shows up and it's the two girls and it's like, oh, I put these roses all over the bed. And she's like, yeah, kind of too soon. I don't know. And she's like, okay, well, I'm trying. Like, they try to build up these characters, but I'm like, no, this isn't the movie for that. Like, we're here to see Winnie the Pooh kill people. Like, we don't need backstories on these characters.
Well, yeah, like,
we
that, like that's
see,
the thing. You know what I mean? Like, it was like they... We're like, oh, hey, our characters are paper thin. How do we give them some depth? I know. Let's make two of the girls lesbians and we can have them have, like, a relationship yep. that we're really not going to give you anything on whatsoever. But, like, you're only going to know that they had a relationship because of some dialogue, you know, no make-out scene, like, nothing. Like, if
no,
you were going to
no.
do that. Then take it and go that, like, extra bit. Go that Piranha 3D route, you know what I mean? Where we got a fucking underwater, like, fucking lesbian scene where we're all like, oh, yeah, we need the fucking move, baby. You know, like, no, they didn't give me that. They gave me dialogue. Like, I don't want dialogue, especially some breakup bullshit. I want makeup sex, not breakup talk.
Yeah. You know, and talking about Piranha, you know, real quick, because this movie is very short, and I don't have a lot to talk about coming up. But I was talking to Audrey earlier, and I was like, yeah, I love your Danny DeVito's. And she's like, what the fuck? What are Danny DeVito's? Like, your tits. And I was like, have you never seen Piranha? Like, Eli Roth in that movie where he's just talking about tits? And he's like, let me see those Danny DeVito's. She's like, you're a fucking goddamn mess. And I was like, I know. I was like, that's what he would be. I was like, yeah, Eli Roth called tits Danny DeVito's. I was like, that's my favorite fucking line from that movie. But yeah, they definitely had no interest in developing these characters for this movie. They're just like, we'll give you something, but they're going to get killed anyway. Like, you're here for the fucking Winnie the Pooh. So Lara's body is discovered in the parking lot of this little house. The girls see Pooh and Piglet stalking around outside, so they try to come up with a plan to avoid certain death. Piglet soon enters the cabin, knocking Alice out and then killing Zoe in the pool with a sledgehammer to the face. Fucking great, man. Like, that sledgehammer to the face was such a great shot. I was like, they get it. We're here to see the kills. you know, just bashing her in the face and then seeing Alice fucking scream for Zoe. That was the lesbian couple that we talked about earlier.
Alice.
So,
sweet Alice.
They are not coming back. So Maria and Jessica observe the duo taking Alice away and decide to rescue her. Meanwhile, in Pooh's treehouse, they find and free Christopher, who directs them to another hostage, Charlene. Seeking revenge against Pigwit for mutilating her face, Charlotte summons Pigwit holding a gun the entire time, but Pigwit eventually gets the better of her and then mauls her to death after Pooh pours honey all over her face. Like, this woman had no fucking chance. I love when she saw herself in the mirror. She's like, oh my God, my face. I have to kill Pigwit now. Like, you know, I was,
what is
I had that kind of, yeah. Yeah, I kind of had that moment where I was like, yeah. But when she started calling Pigwit out and she's like, Pigwit, Pigwit, come find me. I'm like, oh my God, are we really here? Are we seeing childhood characters like Pigwit and Winnie the Pooh be villains? I was like, I'm kind of into this. Like, I'm kind of digging
are.
It. Like, it's really cool, like, you know, to see them become villains. But at the same time, I know that the sequel, Blood and Honey Part 2, has Owl and Rabbit. That's something they never explained in the movie, like where Owl and Rabbit went. And wasn't there Tigger, too, in Winnie the Pooh?
Yeah.
Like, was I making that up? Was there a Tigger character in Winnie the Pooh?
No,
he was like
a tiger,
right?
Around all over the place on his tail. Remember, all of the characters in Winnie the Pooh kind of explain various possible deficiencies or deficits within children or all the various personality traits of a human being in general. You know, so Tigger kind of represents hyperactivity. Fucking Eeyore was depression. You know, Piglet was anxiety. Like, all of these characters, like, you know, they all have a deeper meaning behind them. So yeah, they are all there. It's just, you know, we just don't know. All we know is that Pooh and Piglet are the ones that we are seeing here. I'll give them this. They were smart. They did not write an ending for the other characters because they said, hey, if this ends up as popular as this viral fucking campaign is showing, we're going to get a sequel. And we're going to need other characters for that sequel.
Yeah, I didn't remember Owl or Rabbit. Like, I was trying to think about my Winnie the Pooh knowledge, and I was like, I think there was a rabbit. And then I was like, I don't remember an owl, but there was definitely Tigger. And I was like, where is fucking Tigger? Like, that, I felt like that was, like, the one character from Winnie the Pooh that I remembered. But I guess they're just not going into it. And I was like, I don't know if that has to be a right issue with Melanie, who wrote the original Winnie the Pooh. I was like, Tigger is definitely a part of it, but maybe they just couldn't figure out a way to make it work. It's like, but, you know, because we didn't really talk about the masks that they wear, Winnie the Pooh and Piglet. Like, I like the Piglet mask, but I thought that the Winnie the Pooh one worked so much better because it was a constant smile on his face, and then you kind of see it stretch. Like, when he was really excited to kill someone, all of a sudden you would see it stretch, and I was like, I kind of like that.
I was afraid with some of the earlier shots of the mask, because, you know, that's what I'll give them. I will give them that they do not play the game of we're going to hide what these characters look like. We see them from the very beginning. They light it up. We see what these masks look like. So originally when I first saw the mask, I was like, like, it's not going to happen. Like, I was afraid it was going to be one of those, and the reason why they didn't have them talk was because they couldn't make the mouths move or something, you know? And they were just going to use that as their excuse for it. But then you start seeing the mouths move a little bit, you know, whether it's when Pooh is, like, eating some of the honey and he's just, like, slurping away at it. But then you see, like, these creepy smiles that happen. And I was like, all right, you know? Like, Piglet has this full-on, like, I'm, like, Piglet reminded me of fucking Bullets of Justice, you know, whatever the fuck it was. You know, Benedict Anderson.
Benedict Anderson.
Like, as soon as I saw him, bro, That's what I was thinking, you know. And Dean, you fucking said it when we watched the movie. You said it when we covered it. As much as that movie was a fucking terrible shit show of a movie, I seriously think I used Benedict Asshole and his picture more than any other fucking, like,
yes,
picture
did.
That I have in my phone right now. I send that out
it.
Regularly. Sometimes when I fucking, sometimes when I'm doing, like, a customer, like, I'm writing up notes for a customer at the shop, right? Like, for a job that I'm at, well, I also have to submit pictures in for the job and the property. Every now and again, I actually slip in a Benedict Asshole into the pictures. So, like, you'll have pictures of people's furnaces, air conditioners, and there's Benedict Asshole doing his fucking gun salute with his asshole mouth. You know, like, I just can't help myself, because every time I see that fucking picture, it just cracks me the fuck up. And then I just think, Benedict Asshole? But yeah, that, you know, so Piglet had a great look. But, yeah, I do agree. Pooh kind of has this more, like, Piglet looks like a typical mutant character that you would see in, like, anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Pooh has this, like, menacing look about him that's kind of creepy. I got to say, there was something kind of, like, haunting about it. And there were shots where they would kind of back it up a little bit. And the eyes, like, I guess they, like, put, like, some kind of, like, glow effect in the eyes at times. And it's kind of like...
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't fuck around with that. Like, you know, like, if I saw that, my ass is hightailing the fuck out.
Mm-hmm. There was something really special about how they made Pooh look. Like, with Piglet, they're just like, fuck it, put him in a boar mask. But, like, Pooh, they're like, you know what, we're going to make this special. We're going to make it work. And that's why I kind of wanted more from the killer Pooh. Kind of be a little bit more of a character, where you're kind of like, all right, yeah, he's his own thing, but... You know, it just became so just kind of generic, where he's just, he has the mask, you know, he's obviously a big fucking hulking killer, but there was nothing kind of special about either of them. I kind of wanted there to be more. Like, when he poured the honey on Charlene's face, I was like, all right, we're getting something, you know, because he's pouring the honey on her face, and then Piglet eats her. But Pooh then chases Maria and Jessica into the woods, but Alice stays behind and bludgeons Piglet to death with his own sledgehammer. Apparently, this is a fatal blow, and Piglet is out of the picture. Pooh then decides to take out a machete and impales Alice through her open mouth. Great fucking effect. Like, the fact that it took a long time to put that fucking machete all the way through her mouth, I was like, yeah, we're cooking. We're cooking. Like, I really enjoyed that effect. Even though you could tell how they did it, it worked. And especially how they had the lingering shot afterwards when Pooh walks away from the machete, I was like, yeah. Yeah, we're here. Like, I was so happy with the way that it worked out to show Alice's demise. So back on the road, Maria and Jessica seek help from a group of local men. One of them may or not be from New York, because he has a very fucking New York accent the entire time. As these other British men are hanging out, he's like, hey, fucking no, we got this fucking guy over here. Oh, come on, girls, he's bothering you, we're going to get him. He's like, oh, right, yeah, let's get fucking get him, right? Like, I was like, why is he here from New York?
One sounded like he had an Aussie accent. You know what I mean?
Yes,
like they were kind of all over the place with it. And again, random dudes. Like, you know, like, hey, you know, look, fucking Ronnie Dio showed up. You know, that type of shit. It was like, who the fuck are you guys? Like, you know, how about we do something like where, oh, remember those guys that were at the gas station at the beginning of the movie? Well, look where they turned up just when we needed them. You know, like, anything just to made it make a little more sense, other than just, like, random four guys that are going to go fuck up some madman-looking motherfucker in a Pooh mask. Because, again, I'm sorry. If I'm that one dude that hit that fucker in the head and he didn't fucking move, he's just like, oh. You are tough, I'll give you that. Like, fuck that. I just hit you with a crowbar. You didn't even fucking flinch, bro. Not happening, boys. Not happening. We're out of here. Let's get in the fucking weed.
And I kind of like the fact that they kind of did that in a way where they start hitting him and he's not reacting. Then he starts attacking the group and they're like, oh, fuck. Oh, fuck. Oh, fuck. We fucked up. The one guy tries to run back to the truck and the girl's like, yeah, we're not letting you in. Like, that sucks. That your face is half ripped off.
You tried to save us, but fuck you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
fuck
apparently,
you.
The one thing we didn't talk about is apparently Pooh has Candyman fucking powers because he could just control bees whenever he wants. I love how he throws the fucking bees at the one guy that tries to run away. The guy from New York is like, oh, shit, fuck this. He tries to run away and fucking Pooh's just like, bees. The guy gets killed by bees. I was like, oh, we're not going to talk about that? We're not supposed to say Winnie the Pooh's name in the mirror three times? It got brought up so fucking randomly. I'm like, all right, cool. Because we did see Pooh earlier when he was walking around the house with bees around him, but they weren't doing anything. They were just kind of hanging out. Like, they weren't trying to get in the house.
But there were also a couple of times where they did, like, that one back shot. Like, they did a shot from distance showing you the woods. And, like, you could see, like, it looked like almost like if I didn't realize it was bees, I would have thought, like, is there a fire burning? And, like, there's, like, flakes, like, flowing by the screen. Like, there was something just out of focus, like, constantly flying on the screen. And it was just the fucking bees flying around, you know? So it's just the idea that he has honey. So because Pooh loves honey, he's going to have the fucking bees. But then that begs the question, if Pooh has all that honey, why is he eating everybody else?
That was the other thing I thought about. I'm glad you brought that up as we close out the movie, is that the whole thing is that they became feral because winter was coming. Christopher wasn't around anymore. They didn't have food, so they ate Eeyore. Okay.
And there was no Stark.
But what were you doing the rest of the time? Like, what were you eating? People, you know, like, that randomly came there? I would love to have seen more bodies, because they did show the one skeleton, like, person that was hanging up when they found the treehouse. And I was like, okay, they could have played with that a little bit more, but it's like, all right, well, they obviously have to be eating people because they have to regain their strength, but they didn't play with it enough. I'm like, oh, you need to kind of show that. Because how do they survive this entire time? Like, why are there trucks? Like, kind of like with Texas Chainsaw Massacre, when in the original movie, Kirk and Pam find the house, there's all these cars that are hidden because obviously the Sawyers fucking killed them. You know, they're putting them in their meat. So with Pooh, when you see the treehouse, you see the pickup truck, you see another, like, camper. It's like, obviously those have to be victims, but they didn't play with it enough. I was kind of hoping they would
Well, that's the thing. So, like, when we start hitting this kind of stuff and we start talking about this, right, it was while I'm watching this movie that I didn't realize what film they ripped off. This is Wrong Turn.
Yes.
Piglet. It's just they did not flesh it out properly. Instead of being like, yeah, there should have been all these cars, there should have been a point in which the fucking gas station attendant had something to do with it, similar to, like, The Hills Have Eyes, Like, all of this stuff, like, there has been a larger thing going on within this world, and I'm hoping this is what they do with the sequel. You know, again, now they have money. Now they actually have a little bit of, like, oh, shit, look, we actually got some success. Now let's see if we can really do something with this.
Yes.
I'm honestly looking forward to the sequel. It's Terrifier 2 level?
Terrifier 2 was like two hours of this?
Terrifier 2 was fucking,
like, I don't know, man. I feel like a movie like this needs to be like 90 minutes tops.
Yes. Hour and 30 minutes. In and out. Yeah, absolutely. You know,
I take it back. I'm sorry. I was thinking of something else. Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey 2 is 1 hour and 40 minutes. It is 10 minutes
longer than this. Yeah, no.
My bad.
Blood and Honey 1 was 1 hour and 40.
Oh, okay. I thought it was 1 hour and 30 for some reason. But yeah, I thought it was only 1 hour and 29.
No. I'm looking at it now. It's 1 hour and 40, but it felt shorter. So, I don't know. But either way, yeah. Hour and 30 is all you need for this fucking movie. Like, you don't need to do
first
2 hours.
First Omen is 2 hours long. That's what I was thinking. The first Omen is 2 hours.
Even that's kind of long. But it kind of makes sense. I mean, it fits
the film. You know what I mean? You're looking at something that's going to be building up to something that we already know the result of. So they're going to have to at least spend the time developing characters that we know ultimately aren't going to go anywhere because it's a prequel, you know?
They have to die.
It's all for you, Damien. It's all for you. Yeah, I don't know. I when a movie is that long, like 2.5 hours, like, just justify it. Like, Terrifier 2 didn't justify that length. So I'm glad that Damon Leone for Terrifier 3 is like, yeah, we're back at it. We're an hour 30. You know, we're 95 minutes. We're closing
I've heard
it out
your complaints because... about the length, and I've dialed it down for this next one.
I hope you did because, yeah, that fucking movie, like, you know, it just felt a fucking slog. Like, at a certain point, you're like, all right, get to it. Like, it just, it's so fucking long. Like, you know, it's not an epic. It's a slasher movie. Like, we want the 90 minutes. So we want to just get there. We want to be done. But, yeah, so I'm glad that he heard us. But back to Blood and Honey, Maria tries to run Pooh over with the pickup truck that they got from the men, but she crashes. So upon awakening, she witnesses Pooh decapitate Jessica. He almost kills Maria until Christopher appears driving a car and crushing Pooh between the two vehicles because he somehow knew where they were going to be at the exact same moment. So he shows up just in time. How? Doesn't matter. So we have to close it out. Pooh frees himself, and I love when Pooh frees himself because he just pushes those cars away. Like, yeah, fuck off. I don't care. I'm not even hurt. What?
Fuck off.
So as Pooh frees himself, he holds Maria at knife point. Christopher pleads for Pooh to release her, promising to stay with him forever and constantly apologizing for leaving him. Pooh then breaks his vow of silence by saying, "You left," before slashing Maria's throat. As she dies in Christopher's arms, a traumatized Christopher flees, realizing that his former friend is now beyond help while Pooh repeatedly stabs Maria's corpse.
Guys,
fuck yes. You
didn't realize his friend was beyond
fuck
help
yes.
when he was fucking beating him with Eeyore's tail? He was whipping him with Eeyore's tail. I love that little detail, bro.
Yep, I love that.
He is fucking using Eeyore's tail. This is brilliant.
He picked it up off the fucking wall. Like, they held it as a trophy. And he started beating Christopher with it. But I love the fact when movies do this, where you feel like there's going to be a safety for the final girl or the final boy, and there's not. Maria, the entire time, overcoming a stalker, overcoming her friend's death, gets fucking killed. Thank you. Like, I love it when horror movies do that. Like, thank you for just overcoming the fact that we need to have a final person in this movie. Like, it's so much fun because horror movies shouldn't be safe. You know, even if there's a good ending, there's not. The last time I was this fucking happy was when I saw Texas Chainsaw Massacre: A New Beginning, which was a sequel to the prequel where Jordana Brewster gets killed at the end by Leatherface. And I was like, yes, that's what you have to do because Leatherface has a story to continue. But he's not done. So I loved it. I was so happy with the ending. I didn't want to see somebody survive, and I was kind of hoping that Christopher would die, but let's see if he shows up in Blood and Honey Part 2. Kind of like the Laurie Strode.
I'm not looking up anything on it.
Nope, I haven't. So yeah,
I'm hoping that's similar to this movie. Like I said, like with this one, basically this movie got released. It was like a limited showing, just like it is now. And then they did a larger distribution and actually did have it in theaters for a short period of time as a regular film. I'm hoping the same thing happens with the sequel. As long as, you know, enough people go and there's enough buzz about it, then hopefully they'll have a wider release and it'll just be in a regular theater and I'll be able to use my A-list to watch it.
Well, there you go. And like the Dean had said previously, they're apparently building a Pooniverse. So we're going to be getting a lot more Pooniverse.
I love that name, bro. I love that fucking name. It's the fucking Pooniverse. It sounds like a porn universe. You know what I mean? Like, it's all about the poon.
Mm-hmm. And I fucking love it. But all right. Yeah, that was Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey. Expect a Blood and Honey Part 2 at some point on the show, hopefully before the end of the year. But Dean, next week, the film pick goes to you. What are we talking about next week?
The film pick does go to me for next week, and I spent a lot of time considering this choice because it was a surprise to me. I've been told this before, but I know that the Ghoul Girl traditionally is not the biggest fan of the selections that I pick for the show. So
she downright hates them.
So I really. I spent some time considering this, and I tried to determine if I should pick something and dedicate it to the Ghoul Girl that is possibly the worst horror movie that I can find on planet Earth, or should I try to pick something that I think looks like a good movie that I've been wanting to see? And that is the path that I have chosen for next week's pick, and we're going to be watching a movie from 2020 that is called Hunter Hunter. When you put Hunter Hunter into your Google search, you'll probably see a lot of anime shit. It is not that. This is an actual movie from 2020.
Actually.
I know Hunter Hunter, too.
So Hunter Hunter is our pick for next week, 2020.
Not the horror movie. I know the anime, Hunter Hunter. That's what I meant.
Yes. Well, we're not watching the anime. We're watching.
No,
we're not
Hunter
watching
Hunter
the
is
anime.
About. Hunter Hunter is about fur trappers, if I'm not mistaken. So
yes.
Yeah. I've seen Hunter Hunter. It's not about muck diving. It's about fur trapping. So it's a whole new world for us boys next week with the Monic Dean's still pick of the week. Hopefully the ghoul gal enjoys it. I know she fucking devastated me not liking Ghostwatch, but I'm over it. You know, took me a couple of days, had some ice cream, you know, just kind of thought about it. So I can't impress everybody all the time with film picks, as I found out. But either way, Hunter Hunter next week. So thank you so much, Demonic Dean, for joining us on this episode of Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey. We'll see you back here next week for your film pick of the week.
I look forward to it, and I will be here to discuss all of this fine content with you all.
Indeed.
Excellent. All right, Ghoul, why don't you go ahead and sign yourself off?
You know, again, that's why I love the internet. You know, there's nothing like seeing a picture of Tony Soprano screaming and something saying, trying to drain your wife's multiple boyfriend's balls so she doesn't have to fart their loads onto your banquet Salisbury steak and macaroni and cheese frozen dinner. With that...
What? Okay.
They're scared, everybody. Stay scared.
What? trying to process that for a second. Okay.
I just shared it to the group instead. There you go.
No. I get it. I appreciate it. I just was not expecting that. So, all right, guys. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the show where we talked about Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey. Next week, the Monk Dean's film pick of Hunter Hunter is up for discussion. Hail Satan. Hail yourselves. Hail Odorous. Keep America strong. Watch horror movies. We'll see you back here next week. Lovelies.